Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
'Cause I'm gonna make this place yours.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Conversations at the intersection of life, community, and business. That's what we do at The Upswing. Today, all business with headlines and unique insights from the Business Journal. Joining us today is senior reporter from the Milwaukee Business Journal, Rich Kirchen. Rich, thanks for taking the time this morning. I appreciate it. All right.
Great to be here.
So did any of your children go to a Milwaukee public school?
MPS
school. No, neither did mine. But we lived in downtown Milwaukee for a number of years until, you know, got married, had our first kid, lived downtown right on the river in a condo for probably 2.5-3 years until we decided, all right, we wanted walkable schools. So eventually we chose to move to Shorewood. But, you know, I think that recruitment and retention decision that a lot of residents have comes down to how good is the biggest school system in the state. And obviously going through right now what MPS is doing, Superintendent Keith Mosley resigning last night, education is a business issue. And it kind of cuts at the heart of recruitment and retention. I wanted to read a little bit from the mayor's statement today and then ask you a question about civic champions in the business world. This is from Mayor Cavalier Johnson today. Families and businesses make decisions about moving in and out of a community and where to invest and grow based in great part on the education system. If we want our children and the entire city to succeed, we must ensure they have a great education from early childhood through high school and college or whatever post-secondary education and training they choose. As a graduate of Milwaukee Public Schools and as an MPS parent, I know there are some remarkable public schools in our cities, but there are also schools that need greater assistance and support to best serve our kids. This is not an MPS issue alone. The same can be said about many of our city's private and charter schools that receive public funding. So from a business lens, Rich, who are you seeing? Kind of, I've seen a lot of statements coming in the last couple of days, but who is the civic champion saying, all right, I'm going to corral and I'm going to tackle this issue head on. Are you seeing any of that?
Well, the most obvious and the most prominent organization is the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. They've certainly been involved in school issues, at least going back to the 90s when they were and are strong supporters of school choice and private school options. So Dale Coinga, the president of MMAC, you know, came out with statements before the school board meeting last night and then after. But yeah, so that's the obvious. And he's calling for, first of all, of course, an audit, a forensic audit.
Right.
But he's also saying that the school board should suspend the tax increase that was just approved in the spring referendum.
Right. You think that's feasible?
You know, I don't really know how that works.
Yeah.
I suppose the school board could explore that if they wanted to. I have no idea if they do want to.
Yeah. Well, and there's obviously larger challenges and larger opportunities more than just the financial ones, right? And that's going to be the easy one to go at right now because that's what we're dealing with. But again, from a civic champion lens, is this the MMAC that you see kind of coming in and saying, hey, this is our issue. We're going to tackle it with abandon because it's the most important thing from a recruitment and retention standpoint in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's certainly where they're coming from. This is their future workforce, especially with the population in the state growing very slowly and the population becoming more diverse to the extent that a lot of Black and Hispanic children and Asian children are in Milwaukee Public Schools. Yeah, businesses that are in the city of Milwaukee and the suburbs have a stake in what happens. So, they're going to be involved. How much passion is around that? I'm not sure. I know the MMAC board supports improving the schools. you know, what that means, what that looks like, remains to be seen.
Okay. Well, it'll be definitely good to monitor. And like I said, I want people to look to leadership. Obviously, the mayor, like even the county executive are going to be the two that, hey, you look at, hey, we want answers. But business leaders need to continue to step up and say, hey, this is all of our challenge to take on. When we come back from the break, we're going to go through more of Rich's stories from the Milwaukee Business Journal. We're going to look at a quick update at what's happening at Ascension and several other business stories. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Rich Kirchen, senior reporter at the Milwaukee Business Journal, joins us for analysis and insights on many of the stories of today. Rich, I tried to log on to my chart through Ascension to make my annual summer dermatology appointment. And as a new patient at a doctor, I could not do so. So I called the number, and the nurse was wonderful and really helpful, but essentially said, as a new patient, I could not make an appointment until my chart was back online. And she predicted 2 or 3 weeks. Not sure she had all the information, but that's the information I was given. In terms of the Ascension cybersecurity incident, what are you hearing? Any further updates?
Well, yeah, they just passed last Thursday, I believe, was 3 weeks. So if you're talking about another 2 or 3, it'll end up being 6 weeks, somewhere in there. They did bring their first healthcare system online down in Florida last week, and they say they are quote unquote rolling through their 18 states plus DC and getting the connection back. The news today and no word in Wisconsin. The news today from Wisconsin Ascension was that they have reopened their retail clinics, which are primarily at their hospitals.
Right. And the pharmacies. Correct.
Right. The retail pharmacies.
The pharmacies, right.
So at the hospitals.
Right. So you can get your scripts at the hospitals and not be referred to your local Walgreens or wherever. So that's an update. Continue to monitor that situation. Are you hearing anything from patients or business leaders on the front?
No. I mean, well, yeah, a little bit. You know, certainly frustration for anyone who's a patient.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing, really, in a way that they've been able to keep, you know, they are still accepting patients, they are still treating patients, and the staff is doing yeoman's work.
Yeah, very good. All right, last Friday marked the last day of the CEO at Advocate Healthcare, parent organization of Aurora Healthcare. What's the next in succession at Aurora?
Yeah, well, they already had appointed a woman named Gabrielle Finley Hazel, who had been leading a healthcare system in the Phoenix area. She was appointed president of Aurora, so in charge of the Wisconsin market as of late last year. But the fact that Jim Skogsberg has retired as the co-CEO effective Friday, it's a big deal. It's a big transaction, changing of the guard, another sign. He was the legacy CEO of the Advocate and Aurora merger, Chicago-Milwaukee merger from 2018 or so.
Okay. Do you foresee any major changes in terms of the community commitments of Aurora?
I did talk with Ms. Finley Hazel recently, and actually, thanks for setting that up. We have a story on that in this Friday's edition.
Oh, okay,
but she says they're as committed as ever, and that they're going to be able to do even more because they're part of this larger system. It's now Wisconsin, Illinois, plus a few states in the Southeast. We'll see what happens, but they said they're going to continue investing in services and buildings and technology.
Yeah. Obviously, last week, Summerfest officials unveiled the new $2.7 million Aurora Pavilion at Henry Meyer Festival Park, and announced that a new free festival will be anchored at the festival at this new stage in September, featuring Donald Driver from the Green Bay Packers. So Aurora continues to invest in our community and at Summerfest. So, Kohl's, I want to get to this after the break. You know, Kohl's last week reported an unexpected loss per share below Wall Street predictions, and the company's shares dropped by over 20%. You know, this downturn kind of led to the single largest day percentage drop in corporate history. And I want to see, you know, from your lens, Rich, how Kohl's kind of turns it around. Do they look at their private label? Do they look at a different retail mix? Do they just see, hey, this is seasonality, and with summer, sales are going to continue to grow? We'll look into the future of the retail mix at Kohl's and much more. The Business Journal's Rich Kirchen joins us on The Upswing today. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Upswing, business headlines with Rich Kirchen from the Milwaukee Business Journal today. Kohl's CEO Tom Kingsbury attributed kind of a slower sales to challenging comparisons. He also said that the department store had a higher level of clearance in their mix of retail in previous year as part of their efforts to streamline inventory and initiate its turnaround strategy. What do you see, Rich, is kind of the future of the retail mix on the Kohl's side?
Well, the future of bricks and mortar retail, of course, is the bigger question.
Yeah.
As consumers, yeah, for many years have been shifting more to online sources. That being said, some retailers are still doing well. Costco, Walmart. You know, if you're at the right price point, you have enough inventory.
Yeah.
So Kohl's is in a difficult spot. I mean, I was thinking as we prepared for this about Bon-Ton, which owned Boston Store and was based in Milwaukee for some years. You know, that Macy's is still out there, but that's like a level above Kohl's. Kohl's has always been a value proposition,
mm-hmm.
but not a discount proposition.
Right.
And it seems like the discounters are doing better. So they have some broader challenges out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're kind of creatively in that middle retail mix. And sometimes that's not a great place to be. Otherwise, sometimes it's like, ooh, I know what I can get there. Obviously, many people now go to Kohl's for Sephora. We have a 12-year-old daughter. Her and her friends, Sephora is where they go. It's inside Kohl's. But I'm not sure that's necessarily extended to the rest of the retail mix. But they're trying, through athletic wear and athleisure wear, their own store brands, which is the Flex brand, the FLX and the Tech Gear, performed really well in the first quarter. And if you look at the Lululemons and those type of athleisure brands, I think Kohl's can play in that game really well, if they can marry the customers who are already coming in for Sephora and some of the other similar products.
Right. And you know, as much as they certainly had captured market share with baby boomers and Gen X shoppers, they need to get to the next generation of moms who are shopping, you know, for their own clothing, their kids, you know, other supplies they need. They're remodeling the stores again. I was at the Bayshore location a week or two ago, and they said they're going to be remodeling that store. Well, you can move stuff around, but you know, right? Okay, so you go in for Sephora, and then you see something to the left or right, you know. But yeah, they have bigger challenges. Babies R Us is their next initiative.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that works. I mean, they already have a lot of baby clothing and toddler clothing. So yeah, it's a tough deal. And I mean, they had investor pressure to add new board members, which they did couple of years ago, get a new CEO. They did that.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Kingsbury is an old school retailer, and he used to work at Burlington Coat Factory and some other companies trying to make this work, but it's difficult.
Yeah. Well, speaking of children's clothes, the history and future of Florence Eisman. You know this brand well, and I think if you've lived in Wisconsin long enough, you know, like, hey, the annual warehouse sale from Florence Eisman, that's something I need to attach to if I want to buy a quality brand for someone having a child in my life.
Right. Well, it's right anywhere from baby on up to maybe grade schooler is their sweet spot. Toddlers. So I did the interview over at their location. They're on the near south side of Milwaukee, sort of adjacent to Walker's Point. And they have all these pictures of these cute kid models up on the wall. And I just was like, oh, that's so cute. But we're talking business here. It's, yeah, they're high-end designer wear for kids. They sell through private boutiques that specialize in kids' clothing. Their strongest markets are actually in the South and the Southeast, they told me. But they're in Neiman Marcus. They're in Saks. They're in Bergdorf Goodman. So it's high-end stuff.
Yeah.
And then once, and they've also built their e-commerce business in recent years.
Okay.
But yes, once a year, they still do the warehouse sale in Milwaukee in April after not doing it for a couple of years during the pandemic. They did it again in April, and they had about 5,000 customers come through over 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
And the Eisman family still owns a minority stake in the company, but Frank Krechi, who used to be the CEO of Strattec, an automotive supplier in Glendale, is the majority owner now, and his son Ben is now the president. So Ben, who's a younger guy, 34 years old, said, yeah, the warehouse sale was off the charts this year.
Yeah.
So they are looking, they're going to bring it back again next April,
and
probably bigger and better.
And where do they hold that?
They have their office and warehouse on, I believe it's South 4th Street.
Okay.
Sort of in that Inner Harbor district.
Okay. And did you have any discussions around, have they been able to leverage that warehouse sale to expand their e-commerce sales and their sales in some of their private boutiques that they're in? Or is it kind of a one-off?
It's really a one-off, and it's truly odds and ends. It's not like you can go in there and buy something for my 3-year-old grandchild, you know, which is size whatever.
Right.
So, you sort of what you see is what you get, but they're saying they're going to put more merchandise in there in future years.
Well, the company's done a great job of branding with that annual sale because it's in the consumer's mind for sure. Welcome back to The Upswing. Rich Kirchen from the Milwaukee Business Journal joins us this morning to go through a myriad of business headlines. So the construction, Rich, for the FPC Live venue at the Deers District has begun. 4,500 person live venue at the right next to Fiserv Forum.
Yeah.
The shovel is in the ground. What do you see? Will a venue like this, does it increase the pie in terms of offerings for the consumer, or does it take away a little piece of the pie from some of the other venues that everyone's kind of fighting for the axe to come to town?
Yes and yes.
Yes.
So next topic. Okay.
All right. Let's go.
Yeah. Clearly it's going to, I think at least in the short run, it will expand the pie because they'll be bringing in more shows. I mean, starting in, I think, fall of 25.
Yeah.
So then the question is, does that hurt other venues? Yeah, most likely. Shows that would have gone to Miller High Life Theater, which is just a block away, or even Turner Hall right. Ballroom across the street, smaller venue. But this thing can do smaller shows or something up to 4,500. Riverside Theater could be hurt. So that kind of thing. And it is a Live Nation owned venue.
Right.
And we were just talking about that. Clearly, Live Nation is going to steer shows that they're promoting to their own venue.
Yeah. I mean, could there be any impact with the pending breakup of Live Nation and Ticketmaster? Like, do you foresee that coming down to a local level at all?
Well, I mean, it might be somewhere in the mix, but I don't think it would be the main factor because Live Nation is still the promoter. The ticket revenue obviously was important to them, but Live Nation was and is a promoter first and foremost, and they are the 51% owner of Frank Productions, which owns FPC Live.
Yeah. All right. What is the opening day target for this new venue?
Fall of 25 is the goal.
Oh, okay.
And the fact that they broke ground last week is a big deal because there were a lot of people who thought it was never going to happen.
Yeah, there was a lot of kind of healthy skepticism in some quarters as to whether this would get shovels in the ground and even happen. But, you know, I think in terms of growing downtown, adding another music venue and adding another quality entertainment option is a good thing. You know, could it impact other businesses? For sure. But, you know, there's nothing constant but change. And that's what we have to do to continue to grow our economy and especially grow the entertainment options in downtown Milwaukee.
Right. It's big for the Deer District to have that there.
Without a doubt. All right. So in terms of changes at Milwaukee Tool, what are you hearing on that front?
Well, Steve Richman, who was the company president for 17 years, where they've had this phenomenal growth, they went from something like $500 million annual revenue to $9 billion. They've expanded their operations in Metro Milwaukee significantly, Brookfield, Menominee Falls, West Bend, and then downtown Milwaukee. It's obviously a significant headquarters in our market. They are owned by a company called Tektronic Industries, which is domiciled corporately in Hong Kong. Most people probably don't know that. They have their U.S. office in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And Steve Richman spent a good amount of his time down there while also having an office at their headquarters in Brookfield. Basically, it's his team is going to stick around. What they did was he's been working with, you know, sort of like his first line lieutenants running different divisions of the company, and they made all of them group presidents. So, and they're answering to him. So it seems like, at least in the short run, not a lot of change, steady as it goes.
Okay.
And good news for Steve Richman.
Very good. All right. When we come back from the break, what brought Jackson, Wisconsin, and Charlotte, North Carolina together? This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Business headlines, fast and furious, with Rich Kirchen, senior reporter at the Milwaukee Business Journal today. Rich, a company in Jackson, Wisconsin, and a company in Charlotte, North Carolina, have come together. What do you know on these lines?
Well,
bringing two markets together.
The mystery company in Jackson is Rytec. They have headquartered in Jackson for a number of years in Washington County, and they also recently expanded to Hartford. They have about 300 employees, privately held company. They manufacture high-performance doors for a number of different commercial uses.
Okay.
And they were sold for $500-plus million to Nucor, which is a huge company, legacy steelmaker, headquartered in Charlotte. They have operations around the country, and they've been expanding. In the commercial door market, they made another acquisition a couple of years ago, a much larger one, of $3 billion. And the initial indications are that they're going to combine Rytec and their existing commercial door company. And so it seems like it's going to be a positive for Rytec.
Okay.
I did ask yesterday, what does this mean for your employees? They didn't really say, other than they think it's a good thing. It's a growth opportunity.
And did they know where the home base will be? Have they announced that?
The company that Nucor bought a couple years ago has plants in Indiana and Illinois, I think. So it's going to be sort of an upper Midwestern base.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So is no snow a bad deal for Douglas Dynamics? What is the history, first, of Douglas Dynamics, for those that don't know this company?
Well, I think people in our area know, you know, the Western snowplow. So if you see, it's the, everything from, you know, just a guy who's got a pickup truck who shows up in your alley or driveway, you know, for however many dollars per winter and clears things out, on up to commercial uses. Western is one of the brands that Douglas Dynamics makes. They have a plant on the northwest side of Milwaukee on 73rd Street, and several hundred employees locally. I did a tour of their plant a couple years ago. Pretty amazing, pretty vertically oriented. They do pretty much everything themselves right there. Their biggest market, though, even though they're big in Wisconsin, is the northeastern part of the United States, which as much as we've seen less snow in recent years, it's been even worse out there on the I-95 corridor. And they've really, the last 2 years, they said they've had the worst in all the years the company's been in business. It's been the least amount of snow.
Hmm.
So guess what? They don't sell as many snow blades.
Yeah.
And they've been trying to keep things going at their plant, but at some point they did some white-collar layoffs a couple, 3 months ago.
Okay.
And they just confirmed last week to us that they were – and they're not giving a number, but they are at the end of June, they're going to be laying off some people at the plant in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
As long as things are slow.
And do you see any other similar impacts of snow-impacted companies now that we're into summer and they're looking at the financials and saying, whoa, we got to prepare and we also have to kind of remedy for what happened last winter?
Yeah, well, I mean, you hear a lot about the ski hills in the area, of course. I mean, there are so many different businesses, and it is those small contractors, again, the guy with the plow. I mean, but as far as manufacturers, I haven't heard a lot. I mean, I know there are suppliers in the area and certainly throughout Wisconsin that are involved with snow throwers, any number of different kinds of snow removal equipment.
All right. We come back for our final segment with Rich Kirchen from the Milwaukee Business Journal. We're going to pivot a little bit to broadcast and cable TV. I got some questions for Rich in terms of the median age of the news consumer for TV news. I don't know. We're getting older. I think the TV news age is getting a little older, too. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Rich Kirchen from the Milwaukee Business Journal joins us today as we wrap up the show. Wall Street Journal had a really fascinating piece about TV's aging audiences, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. It kind of is what it is in terms of demographics in America. The audience for broadcast and cable TV, Rich, is getting older and older. Young people obviously watching more online and streamers, but I'm not sure that most people really understand kind of the median ages for a lot of the programming on TV. So I'm going to quiz you a little bit here.
Okay.
What do you think is the median age for network television news? It means half the audience is younger, half the audience is older.
Of course, this is not fair because I read the story as well. But prior to reading the story, I would have said late 60s.
Yeah. Okay. You're about right. 64.6 years old. The median age for TNT and Bravo viewers is 56. For HGTV, even older than news, at 66. And the median age now for the Young People's Music Network, MTV. Any guess? Again, you read the story. So this isn't like a quiz I'm going to give you a high grade on because you already had all the data. But the median age for MTV is now 51, according to Nielsen.
Well, there you have it.
There you have it. So 18 to 49 used to be pretty much that magic demo in terms of what advertisers are looking for in terms of TV news. But now the median age, just quickly, a quote from one of the chief executives of the Advertising Bureau. What a day in the life of a 65-year-old now looks like versus what it looked like 20 years ago, I think has changed dramatically. So what are the business implications of this shift, not only from the business's advertising, but from a viewer standpoint?
Well, yes. So what the big change is that the networks for years, right, they were focused on building their audience at 18 to 49-year-olds or 25 to 54-year-olds. When I used to report on TV ratings, I just looked at the 25 to 54 because that was the advertising target demographic. Now the networks are saying, hey, baby boomers are cool.
Right.
And baby boomers buy stuff. So you should advertise with us. we'll see how that works out, because you I mean, you watch the network news and it's all, you know, stuff you need for your bunions and whatnot.
Right.
And I mean, really, as shocking or surprising to me was the cable networks. Okay, yeah, it's one thing, CBS, ABC, NBC News. The cable networks, all of them, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, were all in that sort of 70 median age, give or take, a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, again, the median age of a viewer of one of the three cable news networks is 69. More than half of the people who watch MSNBC are older than 70. So you have to target the advertising accordingly. But you also, many of the companies, obviously, you're packaging digital, you're packaging broadcast, and they're complete programs that are able to tailor and target people where they're at.
Well, and advertisers for a long time now, because there's been such a splintering of the audience, and right, first of all, it was 200, 300 cable channels. Now it's all the streaming services. So advertisers really have to, and social media. So advertisers have to be all over the place. They can't just buy three networks or even, you know, 20 cable channels. Yeah, it's a lot more work if you're a media buyer looking for advertising spots.
Yeah, a lot more options, a lot more tailored targeting options out there. And the programming, you know, all the networks are looking at creative programming to kind of look into demographics as well. So what else is on your plate for the rest of the week in terms of stories?
Well, I can't say. Be sure to go to our website.
All right.
No, I am working on an Ascension Wisconsin update today.
Very good.
Partly on the retail pharmacy news that we discussed earlier. I'm certainly checking around for news on the Republican convention. There's probably going to be one or two stories on that this week.
Okay. Very good. All right. Well, we'll see you again tomorrow for the upswing. We'll have an update on housing in the greater Milwaukee area on several different fronts. Should be an informative and entertaining show.